Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
I'm Allie, and you're listening to Jackie and Me on Just Food Stories, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. If you missed the live broadcast, you can always find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just Food is a nonprofit organization committed to helping people build community food projects. We know that people all over New York City know that we need to change our food system, and they want to make that change. But so often, people don't even know where to start. So we'd like to take the next half hour and introduce you to some of the people who have started, taking their passions and skills to bring change. Hopefully, their stories will inspire you to create your own Just Food story.
Okay, so today we're here with our guest, Anthony Reuter. Anthony and I are going to share a microphone, so this is going to be a very intimate conversation. And Anthony is a Midwestern transplant who has come to New York City via Wisconsin and Minnesota. And he's been, since he's been here in New York City, he's done amazing things in the world of working with local farmers and urban farmers. So he came as an AmeriCorps Vista, and he worked for the New York City Coalition Against Hunger, and he worked for Grow NYC Green Markets in Manhattan and Brooklyn, working with all the incredible producers that come through there. And since 2013, he's worked at Just Food as our volunteer coordinator.
Yay.
But today we have him here in a completely different capacity from those three, because he is a founder, one of the founders of the Hell's Kitchen Farm Project, which is a project that was launched, or I guess it was the seeds were planted while Anthony was a Vista for the New York City Coalition Against Hunger. And the Hell's Kitchen Farm Project is just, it's a very cool project. And rather than me try to explain all the awesome things that it does, because I know everybody's thinking Hell's Kitchen, Manhattan Farm Project. I don't remember seeing a farm in the middle of Manhattan. So, Anthony, I'd love to, for you to explain a little bit about, like, what is the Hell's Kitchen Farm Project?
So we're a collaborative rooftop farm on top of a church's roof on 40th and 9th. In the Hell's Kitchen neighborhood. We are a collaborative in the sense that we're four different organizations who work in the city that came together at a community meeting and said, what can we do to make the neighborhood greener? The pastor at Metro Baptist Church was at that meeting and said, well, we have this flat rooftop, which is strange for a church. We don't use it that much. What can we do on that roof? So we just started planning and built a farm on that roof.
How big is the farm?
The roof itself is 4,000 square feet, but we're growing in 1,000 square feet of space because we grow in 52 plastic kiddie pools.
Right.
On
oh
the
my
roof.
Gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was kind of a. We basically were like, well, how can we do this for the cheapest amount of money? And how can we do this to keep the roof from falling
collapsing.
Apart?
Collapsing, right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
And so what do you grow up there, and who does the food go to?
So we grow a wide variety of things. Since the kiddie pools only have between 4 to 6 inches of soil, we grow a lot of lettuce, we grow a lot of herbs. We do grow carrots and other root vegetables, mostly for education purposes, and it is fun to get small, tiny little carrots. But all of our produce goes to the food pantry in the church, in the basement, and that food pantry gives out that produce every Saturday morning.
Groovy.
So what's really interesting to me about the well, there's a lot that's really great about the project, but how, I mean, you talked about kind of where the spark came from, but like, how did you go from having that meeting where you identified this resource to having a functioning project that's now growing a ton of food and really doing a lot of interesting projects and work within the community? How did you go from the dream to inception and now like operating on a large scale?
Yeah, and if you can in that answer sort of think about if you're a listener and you have that potential, what those steps are. Like, what was step one?
So we just pulled together people in the neighborhood who knew a little bit about growing food, who knew the neighborhood really well, who had the resources. And we started meeting and talking about what's the best way for us to grow things on this roof. A bunch of churches in the south that Metro Baptist Church is friends with had started growing things in kiddie pools. So we took that model and thought, well, we can use that model on the roof. And then from there, since we work with an emergency food program, United Way said, hey, you should apply for this seed grant where we can give you all the money you need to start the rooftop farm, just because rooftop farms have large startup costs.
Yeah, can you tell us more about that? Because I know a lot of people are interested, and when they think about growing food in the city, they're like, there's all these roofs, but there's a reason why there aren't farms on all the roofs. So what are those startup costs?
So we got a grant from United Way for $30,000. Half of that money went to build railing around the roof.
That's a big one.
To put us up to fire code so we could have people up on the roof. And then after that, we had to pay for all the soil, for the kiddie pools, for the seed lanes, for the seeds, and really just all of that stuff.
Is the labor volunteer?
All the labor was volunteer. So the day that we started, we had 7 tons of soil delivered to 40th and 9th.
How does somebody get 7 tons of soil delivered to 40th and 9th? Did it come like in a container, or what? How did you get that soil there?
So it came in this giant truck that stopped on 40th, which you can't actually stop on 40th normally, and came in these giant 1-ton bags.
And if I recall from volunteering there, I don't remember there being an elevator.
There is no elevator.
Right. Okay.
Oh, good point.
Yeah.
So it's 5 flights of stairs up to the roof. We took those 1-ton bags of soil. We shoveled the soil into 5-gallon buckets and then did a bucket brigade of 60 volunteers going up the stairs up to the roof. And then as soil was brought up to the roof, we filled each kiddie pool and built the sub-irrigation beds that went into some of them. And in 5 hours, we had gotten all 7 tons of soil up there.
Wow.
That's amazing. It sounds somewhat miraculous. That's really, and it's an incredible story. And you guys still, it's still a volunteer run project. Mm-hmm. And it still uses a tremendous amount of volunteer labor to keep everything going. So from your standpoint, and you also run Just Food's volunteer program, but like, knowing everything you know about volunteers, volunteer-run projects, working with volunteers, what are the strengths of having a volunteer-run project, and what have been some of the challenges you guys have faced?
So the strengths have been, our board is a working board, which means every time we have a board meeting, we're talking about what we need to do next, and people are constantly doing work from that point on. Our board is about 8 people, and all of those people give a ton of their time to make the farm happen. They're at volunteer open work days, they're at any events we're tabling at, they're writing grants for us, they're doing whatever we need done. And then beyond that, we use volunteers to water the farm twice a day in the summer, morning and night. And then we have volunteer open days right now, Thursdays and Saturdays, from 10 to 1. And people can just come drop in and help us out on the roof. And a board member is always there to guide that day.
So when we come this weekend to volunteer, we could spend half of our time in the pantry and half of our time up on the roof?
Yes, definitely. And this Saturday is our open house, which is kind of our kickoff for the growing season. So we'll be planting seedlings, planting seeds, beautifying the roof a little bit, and we'll just also be playing some games.
Wow, that sounds great.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, can you say again the time of the open house this Saturday?
The open house is this Saturday from 10 to 3 p.m.
Great. Okay, and anybody can come, and it's on 40th and 9th, and it's at the Metro Baptist Church.
Yes, the address is 410 West 40th.
So going back to the volunteer discussion, because you said something that really stuck in my head about 6 months ago, which was that if you are a professional person or just a person who's interested in food system change and you want to volunteer, you know, I sort of said, I asked you, like, you know, I think a lot of people out there want to give their time to something, but you know, they don't know exactly where to put their time and they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And you said something so wise, which is do what you already do that you're already good at and just do it for the organization that you're working for. Mm-hmm. So what kind of volunteers do you need other than, you know, manual labor? Because I know there was someone at the pantry who was helping people fill out forms and, you know, what is there paperwork? Is there filing? Is there, you know, other than coming to plant seeds, what mm-hmm. skill sets are you most looking for right now in a volunteer corps?
So at the Hell's Kitchen Farm Project, we kind of at every board meeting are talking about what are our additional volunteer needs beyond our board. And we recently just added two grant writers who are volunteering for us. Who are going to work with our fundraising team to find foundations to write grants for. And these people are people who are writers in their daily lives and are looking to get connected to urban agriculture in New York City. And then we work with people who are event planners to help plan events for us. We try really hard to pull from what people already know, because that's usually what they know best and what they're the best at, and that's what we're going to get the most out of them from.
And as you said to me, it spares the organization from having to expend any energy training people to do mm-hmm. something that they already don't know how to do, which I thought was a really interesting way to think about the organization and the resources that the organization has. So rather than training someone to plan events who's never planned one, it's much less friction for you. And, yeah. You know, and so that's really good to know.
And I hate to interrupt, but we need to take a short break. But stay with us. We're going to be right back with Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org.
About a young man and his lady friend. The poor boy couldn't make up his mind, so his good thing came to an end. She said, "Boy, I'm tired of playing your games. You know I'm tired of you stringing me along. If you don't take a stand and start acting like my man, one day you're gonna wake up.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
Welcome back. I'm Jackie Berger, and you're listening to Just Food Stories on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm here with Allie Kane, and we're here together with Anthony Reuter, who is the volunteer coordinator at Just Food, but he's here today in his capacity as a co-founder and board member of the Hell's Kitchen Farm Project. And we've been talking about what it's like to have an urban farm in New York City on a rooftop in the middle of Manhattan, and what it's like to have a volunteer-run project and to rely on volunteers for everything it takes to run a project. But you've talked a lot about, even though it's a volunteer-run project, so you're not paying... I know that you have some staff paid, but only a tiny little bit of money to pay staff. But you're talking about raising money. So how do you guys, or what are the expenses you're trying to cover? And I just kind of want to plug that you guys have a campaign running right now to raise money for the farm. So what are those expenses that you guys are trying to cover, and how can people find out how to support the farm?
Yeah, so every year we have expenses just because as a farm growing in contained containers, our soil gets depleted every season. So we have to re-establish that soil every season. So we're buying compost, we're buying fish emulsion, we're buying all the things we need to keep that soil healthy. And then on top of that, we have to buy, sometimes we have to buy new kiddie pools. We're starting our fourth season, and so far we haven't had to buy new kiddie pools, but we know it's going to be something we're going to need to do eventually. They won't last forever. And we're hoping to expand our compost program because we want to be making our own compost so that we don't have to be buying compost on a regular basis.
And then how, you know, going back to starting it up, how important was it to you to have members of the community? You know, how do you build? Someone has a great idea, a couple people have a great idea, and then they really need to sort of diversify a little bit that idea into the hands of a few more people, right? Because two people running a farm wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. So how do you reach out for people? And if you were, again, a listener who wanted to start a rooftop farm, how do they go about sort of building that core group, as Just Food calls it?
So we were really lucky. Metro Baptist Church is very, very much involved in the community in Hell's Kitchen, and they do a lot of work with low-income members in the neighborhood. Their nonprofit arm, Rosh and Bush Metro Ministries, has an after-school program, a teen center. They run English as a second language classes. They do a lot of work outreaching in the community on top of their food pantry. And then we also started working with the organization across the street from us, Clinton Housing. They are an affordable housing organization in the neighborhood. So we've worked to get those residents involved in our rooftop farm. They buy CSA shares from us. And we're just very lucky to have a team of people who are already very involved in the neighborhood.
So it does help. I mean, you've brought this up, Jackie, too, a lot. To have... to sort of not reinvent the wheel, but to start with a community center or a faith organization mm-hmm. that's already kind of in the community. And now when you said CSA, does that mean that some of the farm grows for CSA and some of it grows for the pantry?
No, we actually partner with a rural farmer. This year we're partnering with an Alaska farm. And every week he brings vegetables to the Hell's Kitchen neighborhood. We started the CSA our first year when we were also starting the rooftop farm because we thought, well, not everyone is going to the food pantry, and Hell's Kitchen to us is a food insecure neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It has great access to prepared foods and restaurants and high-end grocery stores, but there's not really any affordable produce in the neighborhood. So we wanted to start a CSA that would be accessible to the neighborhood.
So if somebody was interested in joining the CSA, is that on the Hell's Kitchen Farm Project website?
HKFP.org.
Okay.
Yes.
That's where you can find information about signing up?
Yeah, our CSA application is on there for 2014. It starts at the beginning of June. And we also offer subsidized shares if you email us directly about that.
And so what is the, on those Saturday pickup days at the food pantry, does the food come literally up down from the roof and goes onto those tables? You know, is there, how does it work?
So at our open volunteer days on Thursdays and Saturdays, we harvest both days. So anything that's harvested on Thursday gets packaged and put in the fridges that the food pantry uses. And then we try to harvest a little bit on Saturday morning right before food pantry distribution. And then the food pantry packages it however is best for their clients to receive it.
That's pretty amazing.
It is. And so you have some food pantry clients who have come up to the farm. What is the feedback that you're getting from the food pantry clients?
I think food pantry clients are super excited because most food pantries don't have a lot of fresh produce that comes to them. Some are lucky enough to be in Just Food's local produce link program and receiving those weekly deliveries. This food pantry is not a part of that. That's why the Rooftop Farm was started. We wanted to really get some more fresh produce to that food pantry, and everyone's always very excited to get this stuff.
Can you speak a little bit to what kind of produce generally goes to food pantries when there aren't programs like this, Just Foods program, or a as local as a Rooftop? Like, what if you arrive at a food pantry, generally, what kind of produce are the clients going to be getting without these types of programs?
So most food pantries have canned fruits and vegetables, canned beans, and then dry goods like whole wheat pasta, brown rice. I think United Way and Food Bank have worked really hard to make sure that at least what they're able to offer to food pantries is as healthy as possible. And then sometimes food pantries do get fresh produce from those sources as well, if they have the money.
But it's not.
It's very rarely local. It's very rarely fresh. But when those fresh items do come in, clients are very, very excited.
Right. Are there a lot of things like you mentioned the seed grants, which is where you guys got the funding from to start this project, because you guys are going to be growing food for donation to a pantry. Mm-hmm. Is there a lot happening in the world of urban agriculture that's connected to the emergency feeding programs around the city? And do you guys have a connection to the other folks doing this work?
Yeah, so when we got the United Way seed grant, United Way actually has an urban farm summit with their grantees every year, and they include past grantees as well. So we are meeting and in conversation with a bunch of other programs. Bed-Stuy Campaign Against Hunger was a seed grantee a couple years ago with their urban farms that provide to their food pantries. And then there's places like George's Place, which is supportive housing. They grow on a roof, and they got the grant the same year we did.
And I want them to come in. I think they're coming in a little later in May.
Awesome.
It's such a cool place to start in terms of any kind of volunteer effort or any kind of entry into the urban ag world, because it marries those two, you know, marries the food insecurity and the urban agriculture mm-hmm. together. And considering what you just said about canned fruits, and, you know, I saw big bags of onions that mm-hmm. some of them didn't look so great. You know, I mean, it's hard for to get that kind of fresh produce, but it's not that hard if it's coming from the roof or from the lot next door.
Mm-hmm.
But growing food in the city is hard, and I can't let you go without talking about some of the trials and tribulations that you guys have faced running an urban farm on a roof in Manhattan. So were there any things that happened, like, are there any things that you guys struggled with that are unique to being in New York City, you think?
And the kiddie pools?
Yeah. So our first year, I was acting as the farm coordinator that year. We put the kiddie pools up. We put the first seedlings in the ground. And I showed up the next day, and all of the seedlings were gone. We weren't really sure.
And you guys are five or six stories off the ground there. So that obviously wouldn't have been what you were expecting.
Yeah. So I spent a little time on the roof just sitting there trying to figure out who took all of our seedlings. And I discovered the pigeons were coming to our farm and taking everything.
And is that a common problem for New York City urban farmers?
No. That's a kind of unique problem for our farm. We're right across the street from Port Authority Bus Terminal, and lots of pigeons hang out at that bus terminal. So they kind of take over the Hell's Kitchen neighborhood. They noticed our farm, obviously, very quickly, and got very hungry.
And how do you keep them out?
So we experimented with a couple different ways. The first year we tried bamboo poles with bird netting around it. That did not work.
Our pigeons are very
smart. Yes. They would land on the bird netting and realize that it would topple the teepees over, and they could get to the food again. So now we have wire mesh that goes all the way around with bird netting on top, and that keeps the pigeons out.
Industrial pigeons.
Yeah.
And what else? Any other challenges? Has anyone ever popped the kiddie pool by accident with the dowel? Something like that?
No, we've actually been really lucky. The kiddie pools are actually really strong. We did have some problems with the roof the first year because a rooftop farm is a water retention, which is great. It protects the roof in some ways, but because we're also growing things up there, we're watering twice a day. Mm-hmm. We had to figure out how to keep the roof a little safer because we had some damage on the roof the first year. And other than that, it's just keeping the soil healthy, which is very hard on a roof.
And do you just do continual testing and, you know?
Yeah, so we did testing last year and found out that our soil was very acidic, which is why our yields the first year where we only grew about 100 pounds of produce. And then the next year we grew 300 and the following year 600. So we've doubled every year, which is really great. But it took testing our soil and figuring out, well, this soil is not healthy.
Right.
And amending that soil every year.
This has been such a great way to spend a half an hour, Anthony. Thank you so much for coming in. I just want to recap for our listeners that if you're in New York City this Saturday, you can stop by for the open house. You can go to the Hell's Kitchen Farm Project website to if you want to sign up for those CSA shares from Nolasco Farm. And also, if you want to support the Hell's Kitchen Farm Project, there's an Indiegogo campaign. How would they find that?
Yeah, so for Earth Day, we did a Indiegogo campaign. If you just go on our Facebook or Twitter or our website, you'll see information about that campaign as well.
Great. Anthony, thank you so much for coming in and joining me and Allie on Just Food Stories. Evan, thank you so much for engineering today's show. Hopefully, Anthony's story has helped to inspire you to create your own Just Food Story. You can always find us archived episode of Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org or as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And remember, if you have any questions for the program, you can call in live at 718-497-2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. We'll see you next week, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.